Welcome to Charities at Work, a podcast of Catholic Charities USA, the national office for the Catholic Charities Ministry in the United States and its territories. Our podcast focuses on the mission of Catholic Charities, providing service to people in need, advocating for social justice, and inviting all people of goodwill to do the same. Welcome once again to Charities at Work. In this podcast, we're going to look at the dignity of work and the rights of workers, one of seven themes of Catholic social teaching as outlined by the bishops in the United States. Make sure you check out the other six themes in our podcast series as well. We have two guests with us today. A little later on, we will hear from Ela Latif, who is the director of the Catholic Charities Employment Network at Catholic Charities in Santa Clara County, California. Ela is going to talk about the practical implications of this theme. Right now, to talk about the pastoral and theological foundations for the teaching on the dignity of work and rights of workers is Steve Bogus, the Vice President of Social Enterprise Initiatives at Catholic Charities USA. Steve, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
There's some people who are not familiar with the Catholic Church or maybe not familiar with its teachings. They might wonder, why does the Church emphasize work? Why is it interested in work? It seems like a very secular topic. So why would it list work and workers among the top seven themes of its social teaching?
Well, there's as we were talking earlier, this is something we could spend a whole course on. But I think it really begins with our particular belief in the dignity of life in the first place, and what does life entail? It entails a number of things, and we often go back to our recollection of the creation itself. And that we think of God's creation of us and of life and of the world as a one-time thing, but it's really an ongoing thing. And so part of what we're encouraged to be, we're encouraged to look at is the role that we play as human beings in this created world of continuing creation. And so you do that through work. And so in a way, work is blessed. Work is a part of the dignity of the life that we've been given. And so we know that as human beings, we do have that dignity. And so work then becomes one of the ways that we play that out and that we live that out. And so that's one reason. And work in and of itself needs to be dignified as well. So
it's interesting that you mention the creation stories that are in the first book of the Bible, Genesis, because, and this may be something that people may not be aware of, but work actually predates the fall of human beings or the first sin, as we sometimes talk about it. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, it is. And so I think that's part of what carries on this, the notion of the continuing creation. And so that whatever we have around us, whatever we've built, whatever, endeavor that we're in, we're actually called to make it better, to make our life better, to make our communities better. And so that we're almost in a way challenged to look for what is this that I'm doing that makes it meaningful for me. Well, one way is that you earn money. Generally, if it's a paid employment, paid work, and so that takes care of my needs and my family's needs, hopefully. And so that opens up the other side of the issue. When we're talking about the dignity of work is one thing, but then the rights that workers have is another. And that leads to how we need to respond and engage with work in our community as well.
Well, before getting into the actual rights of workers, could we talk a little bit about knowing now that work in and of itself has a dignity because it's part of God's plan and predates the fall and all of that. What are some of the qualities that the church emphasizes about work? I mean, why does it have this exalted position, if you will, in the teachings of the Catholic social teachings?
Well, I'm reminded of one of my favorite encyclicals. Encyclicals are the kind of the written teachings of the popes, the Bishop of Rome, and one of my favorites is Pacem in Terris, which was written by Pope John the 23rd. And in that, he talks about a consequence of our dignity is our right to engage in economic activities that are suited to us. And the worker is entitled then to a wage that is determined in accordance with justice. And so that's, to me, is central in that whole notion of work and its dignity. That we, you know, carry out that mission in that way.
It's something that brings dignity to the person. It helps the community, and I think that, as you're talking about, we're talking about in such a positive way that it almost begs the question, why do so many people think about it in a negative way? You know, we often hear people say, and maybe some of us ourselves have had the feeling of, wow, I wish I didn't have to work. I'm just tired of it. So how does one square those two experiences?
Well, I think you square it by realizing that a number of things. I mean, I have one of the best jobs in the world. I get to work in a position where I feel very strongly tied to my mission, and I encourage people around the country to be able to find set up programs that help people have jobs. But I have my days. There are days when it's like nothing ever really comes together. Well, what's that? That's dignity as well. That's a part of the humanity that I am. And so that's one thing. I think the other thing, in a kind of a more practical way, is that sometimes we're conditioned that way to look at how work really, what about work there is. And so I think we're conditioned to decide or to feel like work is a good thing, that I'm contributing and I am and being who I am and all that. Or sometimes we might be conditioned as well to think that, oh, it's just it's a necessary evil and you've got to struggle through it. And at that point, I think we've missed something. And so we need to figure out, well, so how can I contribute? And I think that it really goes back to that whole question of dignity and the whole notion of the value of love and relationship. And that sounds maybe a little heavy at the moment, but it's really about how I respond and engage myself in the social nature of work as well. So, mm-hmm. So I think we're challenged sometimes to see what purpose really is there with this job that I have or this work that I'm doing. And so maybe we need to find that purpose as well.
It may also be, I think that's one way the church can help us. And it talks about work in a very positive way as it contributes to the cooperating with God's work of creation. It's honorable. It gives dignity to the person. It can help the common good. But at the same time, the church teaches that this world is fallen. So sometimes people don't have the job that they want or maybe even are qualified for, or maybe they don't have the opportunity to get a job that would bring them happiness and joy, and they just have to get something that they can get. And so that brings us into the whole, as you were, that you had brought up a little earlier, that the workers have rights. They have, and that's when the community has to come together and try to really help people as best as we can find jobs that are suited for people and really build up the community and the person at the same time.
Sure. And I think that, I think that what you're pointing out is that our natural condition imposes a duty on us, because we can't survive without the economic means that we get from a job. But by the same token, society has a responsibility to make that work amenable and worthwhile for the effort. I think that the current time we're living through the COVID pandemic, and we've discovered that all of a sudden the people who we've kind of didn't realize were important, the people who stock the shelves at the grocery stores, the people who deliver the food we've ordered because we're afraid we're not able to go out. All of a sudden, those folks become essential workers. And so I think as a society, then that the church would say, I think that we need to do something to improve that the economic lot of folks in those positions and make sure that work, meaningful as it is to us today, stays meaningful and is compensated such.
It really is a commentary on our society when you look at the way different occupations are remunerated, the pay that different occupations get. And I think I don't want to pick on hedge fund managers, but I read recently that some hedge fund manager in New York City makes something, I mean, I hope I'm correct, but I think it's something crazy, like $20 million a year, a hedge fund manager. And then you have a person who might be on a staff that cleans up an office building at nighttime. And there's a judgment being made there, isn't there? And I don't know, what would the church say about that? What should we do about it? When a person who is working hard, whether he's on the staff for the cleaning company or whether he's a teacher or she's a police officer or even a stay-at-home mom, we talk about work. It's not necessarily something that one gets paid for.
Sure.
You could still be working hard and contributing to your family and to your community and not getting paid. So what does that say when the pay, the salaries are so wildly different?
Well, it says that we have to do a better job of valuing those jobs and understanding what the plight of everyone is. And this isn't a new question, David, as you know. I mean, popes have been writing about this since at least Leo the 13th and Leo the 13th when he talked about the whole notion of a just wage for the work that's been performed, and that it's unfair for those that have more to get more and for those who don't have it to stay down. And so the just wage, well, now we talk about a living wage, and we still are a long way from what a living wage would be. And so I think that also invests us in taking action in some form, in some way. And that's what the church does often, is speak out about these issues and try and work with public policy folks and with employers to get that gap between that you so clearly described, to get that gap to a point where families are really provided for by the work that the workers in that family are doing.
Yeah. You know, I think another danger here, it's also possible that we emphasize work too much. In other words, that's all we do. It's the end all, it's the be all. I'm going to work 80 hours a week. I'm going to make as much money as I can. And that's another danger I think the church would warn us against.
Absolutely. The church does warn us against that. As a matter of fact, we have the example of taking at least a rest day in the scriptures as well. And I think Jesus was a worker. We know that he spent 30 years of his life before he became public as a worker. And yet many times you see where he would, even in his own ministry, he would take a step aside and rest and relax and be able to do other things. The story of Martha and Mary, and he said, wait, why do you fret about all this stuff? Sit down, relax, enjoy this time, this space. So I know I'm paraphrasing and being very liberal with my interpretation there, but that value is there as well. And it's not that people should be working 80 hours a week in order to make pain for their family. They should be able to work 40 hours a week and be able to get the sustenance for their family to survive and thrive and participate in the economic system. So that's clearly the direction that we're talking about here.
It's another strange juxtaposition, because some people feel they have to work 80 hours a week because they have to make their rent, or another person feels they have to work 80 hours a week because they want to become the best and the wealthiest. I guess it's all about maintaining some kind of balance, respecting what God meant work to be, which again was for our own benefit, certainly, but also for the benefit of our brothers and sisters, especially those who are needy and vulnerable.
Sure. And when you're talking about social justice and you're talking about living in a communal society, I mean, one where we relate with people and with each other, it's very important that we take these issues seriously. And that's really the underlying message of all of this discussion about dignity and that flows from our God-given gift of life.
Well, you mentioned John the 23rd and Pacem in Terris. Doesn't he list a number of rights in that encyclical?
Sure, that's the thing that makes it that makes that particular encyclical so enjoyable and so useful for me. It's about rights and responsibilities, so that with every right there's a comparative responsibility that's attached to it. And actually, I've seen there's a wonderful diagram that's kind of almost as old as the encyclical itself that shows the level of rights from the most basic to the external and broader community rights that are needed in order to meet this. And right. I guess it would only be fair, for those of us who don't know Latin, Pacem in Terris is peace on earth. And so the whole intent of what he was writing was, if we live these rights and responsibilities, then maybe we'll have a better chance of living in a peaceful world.
So the basics, I'm guessing, and if I remember, I haven't read that encyclical in a while, but I'm assuming the basics are food, water, shelter, maybe medical care. What are some of the ones that wouldn't fit into that the basic category?
You would get into not so much basic category, but it's kind of a level of, there's immediate basic, but then there's what has to transpire in the community in order for those to happen. And then the third level is, what does the whole of society need to be in order to make that happen? So you get more from the actual action to what has to change in the system and in the way we do business, if you will, a macro sense. So that's really what it's more about. But you're talking about life, you're talking about ownership of property, you're talking about all those conditions of work that we talked about. You're talking about the ability to involve yourself in the economic life of the community. You're talking about assistance in old age. You're talking about those kinds of things. So
right. And for the workers themselves, I imagine their ability to have a say in what their workplace is like and decisions there. And
absolutely.
Yeah. They can strike if there are unfair practices that they're being placed under.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And the freedom to organize and the freedom to have of assemblies and the freedom to speak. It's not, and these weren't all like new things necessarily that came from the church, but from the whole community. About the same time that this happened, the United Nations had a whole statement on human rights. So it's not anything that's super religious, but it's in terms of religious practice, it's more like how we treat each other that's important. So I would certainly recommend to anybody who hasn't done it before and you hear this thing encyclical, Pacem in Terris is great because it's an easy read and it makes a lot of sense and there's not a lot of theological double speak or triple speak or whatever it might be in it. So
yeah, it seems like another way to maybe summarize it is, are we truly treating each other with the human dignity that we have? And if I have it, then my brother and sister have it as well. And I can do that on an individual basis. I can do it as part of my workplace. I can do it as part of my community. I can vote in people who are going to help with that in legislation and policies and all of that. It's really being about being an active member of the community and truly acting on these principles that the church has given us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great summary, David. You've got it.
Well, and you helped us get it. Appreciate you for sharing all your knowledge and your experience with us. And we certainly pray that all of us can take this teaching to heart and really, really practice it. And we ask God to bless you in your work.
Well, thank you. And same to you. This is a great project going here.
Thank you. We've just heard from Steve Bogus, Vice President of Social Enterprise Initiatives at Catholic Charities USA, who helped us to understand the dignity of work and the rights of workers in the social teaching of the Catholic Church, its foundational or pastoral and theological meaning. Since work is done by human beings, as he said, it has dignity based on its subject, the man or woman doing the work. And the worker, again, because of his or her dignity, deserves certain rights. Fundamentally, work is the gift of God that allows human beings to cooperate in God's work of creation and salvation. It contributes to the individual's dignity. It builds up community. It helps those who are most needy, and it gives glory to God. But how does all of this work out in practice? To help us answer this question, we welcome Ela Latif to the podcast. As mentioned at the start of our broadcast, Ela is the director of the Catholic Charities Employment Network at Catholic Charities in Santa Clara, California. Ela, welcome. Thank you for taking part in this conversation.
Thank you, David. I'm very happy to be here.
I imagine that most people would welcome this teaching that work has dignity in and of itself, and that workers deserve rights. But what has been your experience in your work at Catholic Charities in terms of seeing this theme of the dignity of work and the rights of workers? How has it been lived out and practiced in your experience?
So I've been with Catholic Charities 27 years, and our main support is for individuals who have a lot of challenges to access employment and gain employment, specifically individuals with mental illness and also individuals who are returning citizens and have recently been released from incarceration, from prison and jail. So folks that are very much on the margin of society and wanting to be productive community partners again.
I imagine those populations that you mentioned, probably they have experienced people not giving them the dignity they deserve, I imagine.
There are several populations that we see, and part of the ones that I mentioned, the folks that have the most difficulties are folks with low education, low income, folks who have English as a second language, underskilled, people with disabilities, people of color, and people with criminal backgrounds.
Well, how do you build up that sense of dignity then for them, the people that you're working with?
It's really interesting. Once you have a resume and people see their talents and skills on a resume that they might never have known before, it puts a twinkle in the eye and you hear folks say, I really can do that. And helping folks see that they bring actually to the table many talents and skills they themselves had no idea that they had, and that they can transfer those skills and share their talents and get paid for it.
So you have people who actually help them look at their life and the education that they have and develop a resume, and it sounds like it's working great. Do you have any success stories?
We have a lot of success stories. Every day we see miracles happen with all our populations. But a lot of this work really comes from very individualized work, getting to know each person. What is their skills? What is their talent? What is their experience? What is their education? And what is it that they would like to do in the work situation? We don't have lists of job openings or, you know, banks of jobs where we force fit folks. The conversation starts at what is it that you would like to do? Where do you see yourself working? And helping build that picture creates hope. Work creates it creates dignity. It creates a structure to the day. It creates a pathway to getting back as a community, as a productive community partner. And it's also very important as part of the road to recovery for individuals who might have not worked because of mental health issues continue to lose their job because of mental health issues. Staff, our employment specialists and employment representatives do both. They get to know the client, they get to know the employer, and see where it can be a really good match where both are successful. The employer who has needs, he needs a job position that needs to be filled, and where can the best talent of the individual, the job seeker, be? So what we do is we try to bring it all together.
Yeah. And just going back to in this, what you were just talking about, the original point of asking the person what he or she would like to do rather than force fitting them into a particular occupation. I imagine that just by itself is maybe novel or new to these people. Would that be true?
What we are finding is that you have to listen to their story. You know, that is the most important part of gaining trust and building the relationship. Because once you have the relationship, then the job seeker or the individual coming to us can actually share what are their hardships, what are the challenges, and what is the story? Who are they actually wanting to get the job for? Is it a family member? Is it themselves? Is it because the court has said you have to get a job or you be reunited with your family. There's so myriad of reasons why folks need a job, but until you know where the motivation is and where that individual is coming from, it's a greater pathway to success if you have a relationship. Also, in that relationship, the person is able to share what is it that lost their last job, what is it that keeps them from being successful in the job, so we can reduce those as we go along for greater job success.
Do you find that there is, you mentioned a pathway, do you find that there is a common path that the people that you work with follow? In other words, you get them at the point of entry, if you will, and you begin to build that relationship with them. Is there a common path that they follow from point of entry to employment? And is there a certain time period involved? Does it take weeks, months, years?
So each person is an individual, and the staff really meet the client or the person served exactly where they're at. If somebody is needing a job yesterday, they will walk out with a job lead or an interview with somebody. It really depends on what the need is. Sometimes we have individuals with a lot of symptoms because of mental health. They'll go slower and build up confidence and courage and reduce anxiety slowly, day by day. Each day is progress. Success happens. Till you hear the words, you are hired, it takes longer. Sometimes when it happens that a person is placed, but they're very shaky on the job. It's something that they haven't done for many, many years because of maybe mental health symptoms, but now they're feeling better and they're ready to work. We might take longer till they are feeling settled and happy about their work. So in our field, if one person goes to work, a whole system goes to work to help.
What about the staff at Catholic Charities in doing this work? Do they need a kind of a special skill set, or there anything that you found? I mean, you've been there, as you said, 27 years, which is a whole career. Have you found anything that they need to bring to their work with these people?
A can-do attitude and lots of patience and being very resourceful in helping folks, because sometimes an individual will come and say, I want to be a bank manager or a pilot. But there's no education or skills. So how do you take those baby steps? Part of it is actually listening to what the individual wants and then saying, okay, that's good. That's a great overarching goal, but how do we take baby steps towards it? It might be a very good goal, and it might be that we need to help you get some education or build up skills and go that route. So I have one story. A client who wanted to travel but wanted to work for a specific airline. Was very, very interested in the airports. So but had no skills to actually be behind the desk. So the staff got him a job got him the TSA clearance so he could do the luggage loading and unloading. But it also gave, because it was with a specific agency, a specific airline, he got airline points.
Great. Was that one of the reasons he wanted the job? Wonderful. That worked out for everybody.
Right. So there are many stories.
I'm sorry.
There are daily miracles and stories like that. And then, you know, sometimes folks are not successful in their first job. So it's okay. Each day a person works can be counted towards success and progress. Maybe the best job match is waiting to happen and we go right back into job search.
And so if somebody doesn't get that first job, Catholic Charities is willing to work with them again.
Absolutely.
Until, as you say, you're hired.
Right. Sometimes it's again and again and again, depending on the motivation of the individual looking for a job.
What about, is there any advantage to being Catholic Charities? In other words, having a faith that supports the work?
You know, Catholic Charities is a place that a lot of folks trust, not just our clients who are looking for a job, but also our funders. We've been in the community a long time. And sometimes I feel like we become the catch-all bunny. Oh, this is a really hard client. Send them to Catholic Charities. They'll help them. And we want to be that. We do want to help as many folks as we can. Sometimes folks have to come many times around to really be in the sweet spot to get a job. But it's okay. That's absolutely okay to do. But I also think that we are a magnet to some very dedicated and compassionate people who become part of the staff. And our biggest resource besides the funding is actually the staff that help clients.
It's interesting that you talk about the funders and how they are attracted to Catholic Charities. And I guess it's a way for them to participate in this call, as we're all called to help each other, the dignity of work and the rights of workers. We all have a call from God to uplift one another, and one of the aspects of work is that it is a very social thing. We work with other people. We work for other people, mm-hmm. And so. I'm guessing that's at least part of their attraction. Is that true, you think?
I think also if you look at, you know, from the different, our targeted funding is for individuals with mental health, and the other programs are for individuals coming out of prison and jail and on probation. So for both, for the mental health, it is, you know, a reduction of symptoms. When folks are working, they're feeling better, they have dignity, they have structure to the day, they have purpose, and there's definitely a reduction in symptom and an increase in self-worth and hope and motivation. So when folks are feeling better, there are less of a burden on the mental health facilities and the providers, which are already under burden. For the reentry population, it's, you know, folks when folks are working and contributing to their families or themselves or moving towards self-sufficiency, it also there's a reduction in recidivism. So our hope is that folks are staying out of jails and prison. They are finding worth in work and employment.
Mm-hmm. What about the various forms of government that you work with? I imagine you work with the local, the state, the federal. What are some of the positive contributions that you've seen? And a second question would be, you know, what areas from your experience could be improved?
Mm-hmm. So we have funding from county and state. And both the funders are absolutely integral to helping folks move forward. The one thing that hasn't been talked enough about, I think, is when programs like some of the ones that we have at Catholic Charities, when programs are invested into by the county and state and folks go to work, they pay taxes. Those taxes are recouped by the county, city, and state within so many months. I wish there were more studies done to show just what a wonderful investment it is in employment programs, especially for the folks that are on the margin. Because if you don't help them move into employment, that's really building up your workforce body. And it really is a full circle back into the investment where it came from. I think if we could put have more programs that help reduce some of the smallest barriers that we don't think about, such as somebody, a client got a job and is starting the next day, but his car transmission is out. Now, what do we do? How do we find that funding? Because most of the state and city funding is very, it's very clear cut. Oh, interview clothes, work clothes, maybe some tools for a small amount, you know, for a small amount. But what about if an individual really needs help getting all four tires because the job might be 45 minutes away?
But from what you're saying, it sounds just like you said, it's a full circle. And you have the person who gets a job and either deepens or restores his or her sense of dignity, helps the community, reduces recidivism and all of that, paying taxes. I mean, there's a lot of good things happening. And in fact, what's really happening is it's proving the truth of the teaching, you know, the teaching on the dignity of work and the rights of workers and how that helps the common good.
I have to tell a sweet story. I had a
please
on the door. This was a while ago. And the gentleman was one of our clients. And he said to me, are you the boss lady here? I said, well, yeah, I wasn't sure what to expect. He said, I just want to show you this phone that I have bought. And I've bought it from my paycheck. It's a really nice phone. But your people helped me find the job. And this is the first phone I have not stolen. There's so much pride in that simple gesture.
That's wonderful. No, that's a great story. And I can't think of a better way to conclude our conversation, because that is just, it says everything that you've been talking about.
You know, another story I would say for one of our clients who was having a really hard time finding a job, because she would always say, I can only work between 10 and 2 or 10 and 4. I cannot work beyond those. She didn't have any kids. She, you know, we couldn't figure it out. It wasn't till one of the job developers or the employment representatives was actually dropping her home from after doing a whole day of putting in applications, discovered that actually her home from where the bus drops her to where she walks to her home was a half hour walk in the dark. It was a safety issue. More than any other challenge, it was a safety issue that she wouldn't share. So they got her a job doing food sampling at Costco. The food samplers start after the, you know, later than Costco opens, and they end their shift before Costco closes.
It's the attention to details and helping that person. Right. Yeah. Well, many thanks for sharing your experience with us in this area of dignity of work and the rights of workers. It's such a central part of all of our lives, you know, working, and it's important that we treat it with the care and respect that you obviously are striving for with the clients that you serve. And we pray that God continues to bless you in your work.
Thank you, David. It was wonderful talking to you.
We hope you've been inspired by our podcast. We ask that you pray for us and the people we serve, and consider joining our mission as a volunteer or as a donor. For more information on your local Catholic Charities Agency and the national office, be sure to visit our website at CatholicCharitiesUSA.org.